I'm Veronica Dudo. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, frosted friendship would lead President Trump to announce he's ending trade talks with Canada. Legal woes, why ICE is having a tough time finding recruits, and what it's doing to encourage people to join. Financial boost, how much more money Social Security recipients can expect to see each month, plus joyful jubilee.
So it's been a very uplifting pilgrimage for me. It has given me time to reflect and to place Christ in my heart.
We'll take you to Rome and show you why the Jubilee pilgrimage for the Equestrian Order of the Holy Sepulchre of Jerusalem was such a moving experience. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the feast of St. Antony Mary Claret, the founder of the Claretians. Our top story tonight, President Donald Trump says Canada cheated and got caught. It all has to do with tariffs and a controversial new TV ad. Overnight, the president posted online, based on their egregious behavior, all trade negotiations with Canada are hereby terminated. Now, Ontario says it will pull the ad, but only after it airs during the first two games of the World Series, starting tonight. White House correspondent Owen Jensen has the latest.
Veronica, good evening to you. Tonight, President Donald Trump ripping Canada over that new TV ad, believing he knows why they're airing it.
America's jobs and growth are at stake.
This is the spot created by Ontario opposing U.S. tariffs, starring former President Ronald Reagan and an address he delivered back in the 1980s.
High tariffs inevitably lead to retaliation by foreign countries and the triggering of fierce trade wars.
The Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation accused Ontario of using selective audio and video. And President Donald Trump, charging Canada fraudulently, took a big buy ad saying that Ronald Reagan did not like tariffs, when actually he loved tariffs for our country and its national security. Canada is trying to illegally influence the United States Supreme Court in one of the most important rulings in the history of our country. On the North Lawn, National Economic Council Director Kevin Hassett told us.
Yeah, obviously the President truth, something that reveals his frustration with the actions and postures of the Canadians through months of negotiations.
The ad, paid for by Ontario, not the Canadian federal government, Ontario Premier Doug Ford posting today. Canada and the United States are friends, neighbors, and allies. President Ronald Reagan knew that we are stronger together. And Prime Minister Mark Carney said his government remains ready to talk tariffs in Ottawa before flying off, also telling reporters.
And what we can also control, or at least heavily influence, is developing new partnerships and opportunities, including with the economic giants of Asia, which is the focus of this trip.
As Americans worry about tariffs and inflation, I asked Kevin Hassett to respond to the newest government numbers.
Just simply your assessment of the latest inflation numbers, CPI numbers, 3%.
The inflation numbers were fantastic. 48 Bloomberg economists got it wrong. The core was down relative to August and down relative to expectation.
In his post on Truth Social, President Trump mentioned the U.S. Supreme Court. That's because early next month, the justices will consider the legality of his sweeping tariffs. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
For more on the economy, let's bring in Stephen Cates. He is a Bankrate financial analyst. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, the latest CPI report showed inflation ticked to 3% in September, marking the highest reading since January. What are the key factors driving this increase, and which categories like housing, energy, or food are putting the most pressure on prices?
So energy was a big factor in the increase for headline inflation, which is the average of all the prices categorized. That was one of the major factors. We did see other categories also rising. There was a few things that did go down, though. And I think more importantly, you know, to focus on things like shelter, which actually had one of its smallest increases month over month since 2020. That's a major turning point because it is demonstrating the fact that some of the lower rental prices and the cooling price increases for, you know, single family homes is starting to enter into the CPI data. And that's reflecting a little bit of the reality that we're seeing out there in the real estate market.
The Federal Reserve has been targeting a 2% inflation rate for some time, given that inflation remains above that goal. What options does the Fed realistically have heading into the next week's meeting, and do you expect another rate cut?
I do expect a rate cut. I expected one before this CPI report. I think this being a little bit cooler than everyone expected really cements the fact that we're likely to get this cut. The Fed's made it clear that they have meaningfully pivoted towards trying to protect the labor market and the economy through rate cuts. And I think that, you know, there's really no turning back at this point. I don't think that, despite the fact that we have not gotten any labor data because of the government shutdown, they're likely to pause due to that lack of data. I think they're going to assume that the labor market has not had a miraculous recovery in the last month.
Many Americans continue to feel squeezed by the cost of living, even as overall inflation is far below its 2022 peak. How do these new numbers translate to what consumers are experiencing day to day?
I think a lot of consumers are still anchored to some of the prices that they remember from a year or even few years ago. And unfortunately, we're not going to go back to those prices. But it doesn't change the fact that many people feel squeezed and that their budgets are kind of hitting the wall. Ultimately, consumers are feeling the pressure of falling, smaller increases to their wages, but still increases to prices. And that's hurting things. The people who are able to go out and spend the most are the people who are at the top of the income thresholds. And the rest, basically anybody who's in, the bottom half of the income threshold, they're feeling increasingly difficult times and increasingly difficult to pay for the things that they need to.
Stephen Cates, thanks so much for your insights.
My pleasure.
U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio is in Israel, where one of the key topics of conversation is what happens next in Gaza.
To get through all the things that we're trying to achieve is not going to be a linear journey. There's going to be ups and downs and twists and turns. But I think we have a lot of reason for healthy optimism about the progress that's being made.
Mr. Rubio's trip to Israel comes on the heels of Vice President Vance's visit earlier this week. The Trump administration is working to set up an international security force in the territory. President Donald Trump continues going after drug cartels. In the latest escalatory move, the U.S. military is sending an aircraft carrier to the waters off South America. Earlier today, U.S. Secretary of War Pete Hegseth confirmed a new strike on a suspected smuggling boat tied to the Trende Agra gang, a violent criminal group that organized in a Venezuelan prison. Six people were killed in that attack, bringing the death count for the strikes that began in early September to at least 43 people. New York Attorney General Letitia James has pleaded not guilty to federal charges in a fraud case tied to mortgage records she signed in 2020. Prosecutors say James made false statements on a loan application to receive favorable terms. Outside the courthouse, James accused President Trump of turning the justice system into a weapon of revenge. 3 years ago, James won a civil fraud case against the president in New York, accusing him of exaggerating his net worth. James's trial date is set for January 26. While the government shutdown continues, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement is flush with cash for an aggressive recruiting campaign. But more than one-third of new recruits are reportedly failing physical fitness requirements and even failing drug tests or being disqualified for having criminal records. Several lawmakers are sounding the alarm. Let's check in with Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales with the latest. Eric.
Well, good evening, Veronica. Yes, President Donald Trump approved $178 billion to expand ICE with a goal to hire and deploy some 10,000 new deportation officers by January of next year. But agency data shows hundreds of candidates in initial basic academy classes are falling short of the requirements, like the physical fitness test. It's not too hard. All you have to do is 15 push-ups, 32 sit-ups, and run about a mile and a half under 14 minutes. Several Democrats tell me that they're concerned some bad recruits may slip in.
Agents need the equipment, the training, and sheer numbers don't make for effective enforcement. And unfortunately, they may result in excesses and abuses, like detaining United States citizens, as apparently is happening.
Democratic Senator Dick Durbin wrote Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem this week, pointing out how DHS has gutted offices responsible for overseeing ICE officers and ensuring accountability for use of force incidents, and the need for more congressional oversight.
Who are these people that she's hiring who wear the uniforms without any name tag, who wear masks as they go into the neighborhoods of Chicago and being paid $50,000 bonuses? You know, there's some cowboys among them.
To boost recruitment, Homeland Security is offering a maximum of $50,000 signing bonus and even student loan forgiveness. It also dropped age limit requirements, allowing people as young as 18 to apply, to recruits older than 40 years old.
I think in a world where we're rightfully trying to increase training requirements and fitness requirements in the DOD, the last thing we should be doing is going in the opposite direction.
ICE officials claim the majority of new recruits will be former law enforcement officers who went through strict hiring processes, and the ones being disqualified are candidates going through the initial basic academy classes. Most Republicans say they're not concerned.
These are law enforcement jobs, and something that street cops and other law enforcement officials do on a regular basis. It just has to. It's just that ICE has a specialized role to play. But I'm not concerned that somehow they won't be properly trained or incapable of performing their job.
And by the way, the training period at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center in Georgia has also been shrunk from 13 weeks to only 6 weeks. Lawmakers tell me that they are going to be following very closely the actions of the 10,000 new recruits as soon as they hit the streets to see if any congressional action needs to be made. Veronica?
Eric, you're also keeping a close eye on the government shutdown. What's the latest on that?
I tell you what, I may sound like a broken record. We're in day 24, and unfortunately, there is still no resolution in sight. Most senators aren't even up here on Capitol Hill. It's just us, the media, and they're already back in their states. Now, Democrats continue to say that they will not allow the shutdown to end until Republicans give in to their demands of restoring Medicaid cuts and Obamacare subsidies. However, Republicans, including President Trump, have said that they can negotiate restoring those health cuts only after a vote is made to open the government. President Trump even offered Democrats to come to the White House and have a dinner as some sort of incentive. But Republicans say that the health care should be debated through the normal appropriation process and not done in a backroom deal. Next week, Senate Majority Leader John Thune is considering bringing to the floor once again a vote to pay the U.S. military and federal workers who are currently working during this government shutdown. But Democrats say that they are going to block it again and vote no if health care cuts are not included. Now, over on the House side, Minority Leader, Hakeem Jeffries does plan to call all Democrats back to D.C. over on the House on Tuesday of next week, attempting to put the pressure on Speaker Mike Johnson to bring back his Republican colleagues. So right now, the stalemate continues. And by the way, many federal employees are set to miss their first full paycheck today. So the pressure on this issue is only going to get stronger as it marches on. Veronica.
Thanks, Eric. Starting next year, Social Security recipients will see a small boost in their benefits. Recipients will get a 2.8% increase in payments per month. It's higher than the 2.5% cost of living adjustment beneficiaries received this year. However, it's a lot less than the increases previously given when inflation was spiking during and after the pandemic. The annual adjustment is based on inflation, which has eased after hitting a roughly four-decade high in 2022. We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly, a nightly jubilee. Members of the Equestrian Order of the Holy Sepulchre of Jerusalem are in the Eternal City. Why their pilgrimage is having such a profound effect. And as America gets ready for the World Series, we talk to the baseball priest, who he is and how he earned that name. Court is being asked to protect compassionate counseling for kids struggling with their biological sex. In the case Catholic Charities versus Whitmer, counselors are challenging a Michigan law that bans them from helping children talk through underlying causes of their discomfort. Instead, they're required to assist the children with gender transition. A ruling in the case is expected in the coming months. Pope Leo approves the beatification of 11 priests martyred under Nazism and communism while recognizing 4 new venerables. The Vatican recognized the deaths of 9 Polish Salesian priests killed in Auschwitz and 2 Czech diocesan priests executed by the communist regime in the 1950s as acts of martyrdom in hatred of the faith. The dates for their beatifications have not been released. Pope Leo also recognized 4 new venerables, including a Spanish Cistercian sister and a Spanish Dominican priest, as well as an Italian Carmelite friar and an Italian priest, all known for their holiness and zeal. Today, the Holy Father addressed participants of the meeting of the Majors Superiors of the Society of Jesus, also known as the Jesuits. He encouraged them to discern new ways of living out their mission in today's world. The 10-day meeting started last Friday and includes reflection, communal discernment, and a Jubilee pilgrimage through the Holy Door. Among the many pilgrims traveling to Rome for the Jubilee of Hope, a special order gathered this week, the Knights and Dames of the Order of the Holy Sepulchre, who support the Christian presence in the Holy Land. EWTN News Vatican journalist Benedict Settegren spoke with members of the order who journeyed from afar to take part in the celebrations.
Since the First Crusade liberated Jerusalem and the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in 1099, the site of Christ's resurrection has been under the care and protection of Christian knights. Their legacy lives on today in the Equestrian Order of the Holy Sepulchre of Jerusalem, which continues to serve the Church and support Christians in the Holy Land. As part of their Jubilee pilgrimage to Rome, the order met with Pope Leo, who thanked them for their mission and urged them to continue their work with determination and faith.
We guard, as part of our charism, you know, the ancient Church of the Holy Sepulchre, the church where our Lord rose from the dead. And he told us not to just only focus on that spirituality, but to also focus on the needs of the times today, which obviously in the Holy Land, the needs of the Christians are urgent right now. So part of our mission as Knights and Dames of the Holy Sepulchre is to advocate for those Christians and to support them. So the Holy Father reminded us that today more than ever that we need to live up to that charism.
Hailing from over 40 countries worldwide, 3,500 knights and dames gathered in the Eternal City to visit papal basilicas and pass through the different holy doors. The pilgrimage offered an opportunity to meet members from around the world, share experiences, and discuss their work to strengthen the Christian presence in the Holy Land.
In the normal year, you spend the time with your Austrian colleagues, and now it becomes an international dimension. And that's the thing I take back to Austria, because we are an international order. We have the same goals for peace in the Holy Land, for help for the Holy Land, and for the Christian in the Holy Land. And that's what we should bring back to our liturgies, to our states, and tell our brothers and sisters who couldn't be with us today.
So it's been a very uplifting pilgrimage for me. It has given me time to reflect and to place Christ in my heart. It's given me moments of silence where I have found clarity, and it's given me much inner peace. And I hope to be able to bring back the teachings that we've heard, the homilies and the messages that we've heard during the pilgrimage back to England and to my peers.
The pilgrimage concluded with a solemn mass in St. Peter's Basilica, celebrated by the Grand Master of the Order, Italian Cardinal Fernando Filoni.
In nomine Patris, et Filii, et Spiritus Sancti.
The readings and prayers were offered in the various languages of the members who filled the basilica to capacity. 12 years after their last international pilgrimage, the Knights and Dames of the Order described the entire pilgrimage as not only beautiful and unforgettable, but also as a lasting source of hope.
I'll share the experiences and the lessons I learned of my fellow knights and dames who couldn't make it here to Rome, and also for my family as well. So it was such a great time, and now it's ending. I'll cherish these memories for the rest of my life.
This is a time of renewal and a time where we're about to gain the plenary indulgence, the remission of our sins. And I would love to bring that spirit back home to those who are maybe not practicing the faith, who maybe don't understand the faith, that, you know, the Lord is risen. The Lord wants us to be his brothers and sisters. He died for us, and he wants to forgive us our sins. And I would love to bring that back to home. Yeah.
In Rome, Benedictia de Grian for EWTN News Nightly.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, from baseball diamond to priesthood, Father Burke Masters, known as the baseball priest, shares how God called him to a life of faith and even shares his take on this year's World Series. Tonight, the World Series begins between the Los Angeles Dodgers and the Toronto Blue Jays. Someone who knows a little about what the players are going through is Father Burke Masters, the so-called baseball priest. He's been the chaplain for the Chicago Cubs since 2013. That includes their 2016 World Series championship. And Father Burke Masters joins us now. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
You're welcome. Great to be with you, Veronica.
So for those who may not know, how did you get the name the baseball priest?
So I played college baseball at Mississippi State University and then played briefly in the minor leagues. And that was my dream, to be a Major League Baseball player, but that didn't work out. And God eventually called me to be a priest. And in 2013, so I was ordained in 2002, became a priest then, and then I was named the chaplain of the Chicago Cubs in 2013. So God brought baseball back into my life in a way that I never expected. And so since then, people have called me the baseball priest because I love to connect faith and sports.
Now, your story from baseball diamond to the priesthood is both inspiring and unique. Can you share the moment when you realized that God was calling you away from professional baseball and towards a life of faith and service?
I think it happened when I was in adoration one day. I was actually sitting with my girlfriend at the time, and I felt God calling me to the priesthood. And it really wasn't what I wanted, but it was this persistent and gentle call from the Lord that I knew I had to give it a try. And so I had a long talk with my girlfriend. We broke up. I went to seminary fully thinking I would go to seminary and not like it and then go back to my plans. And yet when I got to seminary, I just felt this overwhelming peace. And, you know, that's one of the fruits of the Holy Spirit. And I haven't looked back since. I've been a priest now for 23 years and absolutely love what I get to do.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that moment. Now, you've often said that baseball was a path God used to prepare you for the priesthood. Looking back, how has your experience in the sport shaped the way you minister, communicate, and build community today?
Yeah, so baseball taught me a lot of things, among them discipline, hard work, how to work with people of a lot of different backgrounds. And I find that to be so helpful in my life as a priest, as a vocation director, as a pastor, that I try to invest a lot of time in my spiritual life. But also baseball has given me a way to maybe reach people who are not close to God in the moment, as you know, I bring in stories about baseball or my sports background. And then it gives me an opening to speak about Jesus and the church, and just been a great gift.
Well, talking about baseball, you know a little bit about going to the World Series when you were a chaplain for the Cubs. What was your role during that time, and how do you advise players today?
Yeah, so I happened to be the chaplain for the Cubs in 2016, and so I didn't travel with the team. So, you know, my full-time job is as a pastor in the Diocese of Joliet. But I was at all the home games. And one of my big messages to the players then and to the players now would be, just remember your identity, your beloved sons of God. Your identity is not in the sport of baseball. And what I find that helps players do is to relax, to say, yes, this is a big game. Millions of people are watching. But in the end, it's still just a game. And life goes on.
And before we let you go, have to ask, who's your pick to win this year's World Series?
I think if I go with my head, the Dodgers will win. But I love pulling for the underdog. And so my heart is going with the Toronto Blue Jays. And so I'm going to say the Blue Jays in seven.
Father Masters, thank you so much.
You're welcome. God bless you.
Thank you. We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Veronica Dudo. Good night and God bless.